This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. My name is H.F. Mason. I'm a general surgeon and chief medical officer at Baptist Memorial Hospital DeSoto and chief quality officer for the Baptist system.
And hey, everybody, I'm Jake Lancaster. I'm an internal medicine physician and the chief medical information officer for the Baptist system.
Well, guys, this morning we are so excited to have Jennifer Garvey Berger as our guest. She's coming to us from the south of France, which is really cool. And Jennifer is the a co-founder and CEO of Cultivating Leadership. She's the author of many books, including Leadership Mind Traps, Simple Habits for Complex Times, Unleash Your Complexity Genius, Growing Your Inner Capacity to Lead, and Simple Habits for Complex Times, Powerful Practices for Leaders. Jennifer, once again, welcome. And tell us a little bit about yourself and where you got to where you are now in the south of France.
Thanks for having me. How long do you have? This is so I have been interested in the kind of intersection between leadership and complexity for my whole career. Super engaged with how is it that we grow our resources to be better able to handle a complex world, particularly leaders. And when I started out in this field 27, 28 years ago, it was a very fringe idea. This whole complexity thing was fringe, the whole how do we grow ourselves, all fringe. And now it's a lot less fringe right now.
Sure.
You know, those 30 years ago, you would not have called me. You would not have been interested in this topic, but suddenly some people are interested in this topic now. And I guess I decided to put all my theories to the test when a few years ago, 12 friends and I bought a big house in the southwest of France, and we live in community here. And if I didn't know about complexity before, I certainly know about complexity now.
Sure, when you're living with 12 other adults. But talking about complexity and leadership in complexity, what has changed being a leader 20, 30 years ago? And I assume things were less complex, but unpack that a little bit for us about how the complexity has changed.
Yeah, thank you. So I think the main thing that's happened is across virtually every dimension, things have gotten more enmeshed so that something that happens on the other side of the world affects me in a way that it didn't 20 years ago. And things have gotten more uncertain as, say, the political systems around the world get more uncertain and the climate gets more uncertain and the way markets work gets more uncertain. All of that enmeshment and uncertainty gives us the complexity that we face right now. There's also things like the speed of technological change, the speed of information, the fundamental questioning about whether we can trust the information we see with our own eyes, or whether it's a deep fake of some kind. You know, all these things mean that we are less able to kind of trust that the world as we know it is going to be the same tomorrow as it was yesterday. And it used to be that that was true in some industries, right? You would expect high tech to be like that. You would expect some parts of medicine and medical research to be like that, where it really is, you really don't know what's going to happen next. But by and large, like, you would expect manufacturing to be very predictable. You would expect many kind of consumer goods to be very predictable. And they're just not anymore. They're not.
Hmm. You know, maybe before we get too far down into the topic, can we just define complexity and what makes something complex versus complicated?
Yeah, sure. So complexity is when there are patterns. Systems are pattern, but not predictable. So you can find patterns in them, but you can't guess that the thing that happened before with this pattern is going to happen again. Things become very context dependent, and they become quite quite intertwined so that no one person or department or government or unit can actually make something happen, right? The thing that happens arises from the combination of all those things. Whereas something that's complicated is tricky. I think of it as like a watch, right? Like a watch is super complicated. I don't know how to fix it if it breaks. But there are people who know how to do it. My taxes are complicated. Some pieces of medicine are complicated, you know, where deep expertise and experience lets you believe that the thing that you've seen 10,000 times, you're going to see the 10,001st time. It's going to be the same. So that complicated things can be dealt with by expertise and experience. Complex things can only be dealt with by some combination of innovation and experimentation.
So given enough variables, you can predict something that's complicated, but you wouldn't be able to do that for something that's complex. Is that a
one way to think about it?
Okay.
Exactly right.
I guess my daughters would be considered complex because
parenting is always complex, right?
Unpredictable.
And parents try like crazy to make it more predictable. And then we keep being surprised.
Absolutely.
Right? Somehow still a shock that when our kids do something that we did not see coming.
Well, what makes it difficult or what are some of the pitfalls that leaders have in these complex situations and complex environments?
Well, both our
education. And have traditional leadership styles, do they have to be modified?
Yeah, they do. Our education generally pushes the complicated, right? Expertise, experience, getting it right. People who become successful tend to become successful because they've mastered the complicated. They've gotten deep in their expertise. They pattern recognize. They're very good at finding root causes and solving things. And, you know, a lot of forms of leadership are about that. I know the way we're going. I know the destination. Follow me. And my job is to be kind of inspirational, pull you along with me, because I've seen what we need to do, and I'm going. The complex world is just different, right? The complex world says, no, you don't know what's going to happen next. You don't know. And your perspective is too small to actually generate as many options as you need. Or your perspective is also too biased because you're always on that side of your eyeballs, right? You're always filtering based on what you're expecting, what you're wanting or dreading. And so your perspective will always be too limited. Complexity requires collectivity. It requires diversity so that we can it requires a disagreement so that we can have a broader span of solutions. We can be scanning the environment more clearly and we can be kind of ready to move.
Are there certain industries that are maybe more complex than others? I mean, when we think about, we talk about continuous improvement on this podcast a lot. And we often talk about, you know, how the airline industry, you know, their record on safety and quality is so much better than healthcare's, for instance. And, you know, when I think about it in terms of complexity versus complicated, maybe it's just because the airline industry is more just a complicated system and healthcare is just so complex that it's not as easy to figure out. Or is that, I mean, would you say that's a good assessment? We're always trying to improve the quality in healthcare, mm-hmm. but maybe it's just not even possible to get to where the airline industry is because of the complexity.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. When I think about it, the airline industry has done an incredible job at automating what can be automated. And then they've had to deal with the complexity of human interaction, right? And they've also really, really worked on the complexity of human interaction. So they've been able to figure out You know, what sorts of things can we take out of the hands of humans? And what sorts of things do we have to really help humans avoid some of their natural inclinations, like their inclination to believe a superior, even if their eyes tell them something else, for example. So, you know, the airlines do a phenomenal job training people on that. And I think you are right. I think that healthcare is just way more complex. It's got way more independent agents working on this incredibly complex, unpredictable thing, the human body, right? And when you think about the number of humans that touches a patient and the number of things that can go wrong and the number of systems that are involved inside the patient and around the patient in a hospital, I mean, it's just an airplane starts to look like a very simple machine. Yeah. Indeed. Sure. That's not facing, you know, the complexity theorists make a difference between whether we're talking about the complexity of say nature, which is well studied, particularly weather. Weather is pretty much the best studied complex phenomenon on Earth, right? We have more data, we collect it more often, we have more people devoted to it. Weather is incredibly well studied. That's the big complexity planes need to deal with, right? Mm-hmm. Human systems, complexity theory puts into a different bucket, as human complexity is way more complex than natural complexity, because humans also have these irrational ways of working, right? One rain cloud doesn't say to another rain cloud, I'm pissed off at you today, so I'm going to move against my best interests just to make your life worse. But humans do that to each other all the time. And so you can't even judge what's in the human's best interest, and therefore that's what they'll do, because humans are constantly operating against their best interests, which makes their behavior irrational. Right. If we were rain clouds, we would all take the medicines our doctors prescribed. We would take them at the right time, and doctors would be able to have at least that thing wiped out. But we are not.
You said that, airlines have done a lot to take the human factor out of things. So that brings in human factors engineering. And when you're dealing with complexity, I think that's one thing that we're falling behind in healthcare, is we're not using that human factors engineering to understand how humans are going to react in certain situations, and trying, as you said, trying to automate and take that, you know, a lot of times the human factor is the highest risk. If you can take that out, you can mitigate a lot of the errors and the risks that we face in healthcare.
Yeah, you either need to take it out. See, the airline industry has done a really good job of taking out, by automating the machinery, some places where humans would, say, get anxious and make a wrong move, right? But also training humans to do the human part really well, right? And I'm not sure medicine does either of those things super well. They're, you know, your field way more than me, but there are a lot of doctors who believe they know the truth, right, about what's going to happen next. And even if a test comes one way or whatever, they still believe they know better than the machines or the testing, you know, and sometimes they do. And I don't think in the medical industry, we have yet found a way to help medical professionals overcome some of their biases in order to work together super effectively. You know, it's a very hierarchical profession. It's a place where there's so much training that the people who are super well trained have just a hard time knowing that they might be wrong right now. And so they, you know, keep their ideas rolling even when their ideas are dangerous. And pilots were that way too. And they crashed planes. But those mistakes happen at such scale that then the airline industry stops, figures out what it was, and works to create training that fixes those challenges.
Maybe we can talk a little bit more about how training can help in a complex world. We've talked a lot about it on this podcast that most of us in healthcare are kind of trained in our own silos. Nurses go to nursing school, physicians go to medical school, and they do not meet and work together until that first day when they're working on a patient together. So they don't really know how what they do affects any of the other fields. And I imagine that has some consequence in a complex worlds.
For sure, for sure. Because one of the things that we know is that when you're dealing with complexity, teamwork is incredibly important, right? And how we team together, and hierarchy really gets in the way of that. And so the lack of knowledge plus the very significant hierarchy is problematic. The other thing I think is super problematic in the medical industry is the way we do specialization, you know, that somebody's trained to just look at knees and somebody else is trained to, you know, look at livers and somebody else is trained to look at lungs, you know, when it's mm-hmm. one human that has the knees and the livers and the lungs, and probably there are systems that intersect, and those doctors don't speak with each other very often, and the patient doesn't know how to put it together. So I know I've had cancer twice. I've had breast cancer twice. And you know, I had a radiotherapy doctor and a chemotherapy doctor and a medicating doctor and a surgical oncologist, yep. right? And then there was a nutritionist and then, you know, a psychologist. You have like this huge team. You as the patient, me as the patient, I didn't know how to reconcile that one doctor told me one thing and another doctor told me another thing. I didn't know how to deal with it. They had strongly different suggestions and I'm just getting them, right? Yeah. You know, I don't know. I didn't go to medical school. I don't know. I just have a body, right? I don't know necessarily what to do with it when it breaks down. But the way the industry is set up is to create those sorts of conditions.
Yeah, you need it. You need somebody who can help you navigate or see the whole big picture. But
exactly.
A few minutes ago, you talked about the, you know, sometimes as physicians, we feel the need to be right, even when, you know, the data may show differently. And you mentioned that as one of the mind traps that we fall into in times of complexity and stress. What, talk to us about some of the other mind traps that we get into that we can work on to avoid some of these pitfalls.
Yeah, it turns out that in addition to our education systems and our employment systems, very often kind of creating the conditions where we believe that the future is or should be like the past. We have a whole bunch of embodied systems. Like our psychobiology tends to also tell us this. Our emotions are predictive. Our reflexes are often predictive. And a lot of what our brain does is tell us, oh, you've been here before. You know what's going to happen next. And so that actually sets us up for all kinds of simplification errors in a complex world that create these, what I call mind traps. One of them is this idea of rightness, which is we tend to believe that our opinions about things are right, and we tend to close off to evidence that they might be wrong or play down evidence that we might be wrong. I mean, you just see that in the American electorate, right? Trying to choose a leader for a nation as big and complex as the US is a difficult thing. And it's filled with complexities, but just about everybody knows for sure what the right answer is, mm-hmm. right? But they have a whole bunch of different right answers, but they know them for sure. And so you see, this is necessarily wrong, right? Anybody who feels like they know for sure what the right answer is for the American government is wrong, because there's no way, it's impossible to know for sure, But we reinforce our beliefs. We look for things that that amplify our beliefs, and we ignore or write off things that get in the way of our beliefs. So rightness is one of them. We love to be in control of things. We like to put our hands on things, make them happen. And in complexity, you can't do that. And so we tend to substitute things that we can control for the actual complex events. There's a great story that comes from the British health system, the English health system, the NHS. It's a terrible story, really, but it's very evocative, where they're having trouble with their emergency rooms, with patient satisfaction in emergency room care. This is before, way before the current misery that they're in. Having trouble with patient satisfaction in emergency rooms, they put a blue ribbon panel on it. The panel does all kinds of investigation and decides, yes, the thing that's most problematic is wait times. And so that's what they work on. They start to incentivize hospitals to have wait times of a particular target. They penalize hospitals that don't have those wait times. And what they find is the wait times around the country plummet into acceptable levels. But patient care also plummets. Patient satisfaction also plummets, because now everybody's solving for this one variable, wait time, instead of all the other variables that go into a satisfactory emergency room experience, mm-hmm. right? So we very often try to control one variable in a complex world, and we get trapped by control. We also get trapped by our need to agree with each other, right? Our need to fit in, to belong. This happens. This was a really big problem in airlines for a long time, where people would say, oh, you have more status than me. You must be right. I must be wrong. And we polarize, right? So if you're not on my team, we create silos, which, as I understand it, happens in places like hospitals quite easily, where different silos actually other each other and can even work against each other in some ways, trying sure. to get more resources and good stuff for themselves. And then we create these stories, simple stories that are reinforcing, that we tell ourselves, we tell about other people, we tell about this situation, we make other people into villains. We are always the hero, of course. So we get trapped by simple stories. And then the fifth one, so we have rightness, control, agreement, simple stories. And the fifth one is our own egos. We're constantly trying to like be the version of ourselves we want people to see. That might be expert, it might be strong, it might be smart, whatever it is. It gets in the way of our being like open to possibilities, open to our own change, and open to the complex world around us.
Let's talk about maybe a recent, well, painfully recent complex situation with the pandemic, 2020. Certainly, I think it fits the definition of complexity, and you know, a lot of, you know, the leaders at the, you know, at that time probably thought it was very similar to something they'd seen in the past, other pandemics. And so it would just unfold exactly how the previous one did, and we could do the same things and things would happen. Definitely when you're going through those pitfalls, I saw a lot of them, you know, a lot of people predicting with absolute confidence that it was going to do X, Y, and Z, peak here, drop there. And almost none of those predictions turned out to be true. But we all wanted to do something to, you know, to influence the outcome. But I just have to imagine how difficult it was to try to lead during that time. Certainly you do want to project some confidence. I don't know if you could just say, this is a complex situation. We don't know what's going to happen, you know. Figure it out for yourself. I don't know if that would have gone too well either, but you know, how do you balance that that confidence, that you know, assurance that to the public and everybody else that you have a handle on the situation with the reality that there's a lot of uncertainty? How would you go about that?
I think you do need to frame up. I find it really useful to have leaders frame up. Here's what we know. Here's what we're finding out. And here's what we can't know. Right? Mm-hmm. We can't know it. It's not knowable. And here's how we're dealing with these three domains. Right? Because here's what we know became a bigger set all the time in COVID, right? At first, we didn't know anything, right? At first, we knew so little about the thing. And, you know, many people's reaction was to just stop, right? Stop, stay home, don't travel, stop, which is not a bad first reaction when things are spinning out of control. Stop it. And then we start to know things. And as we start to know things, then we can put those in that bucket. And we can say, we have a lot of experts trying to figure out what they can know. What we know right now is if you stop, that's helpful. Okay, now we're going to start moving again. When we start moving again, here are the things that we've found that are helpful, right? I think we tend to act as if we either know it all and can control it, or it's like completely impossible. We can't know any of it. It's spinning out of control. Actually, there's quite a lot of space in between. And people can understand. And I think our nervous systems relax if somebody says, here's what I know. Here's what I don't know. But there are teams working to figure this out. They're working day and night to figure this out. And here's what we're not going to know until it happens. We're not going to know what happens next winter until next winter comes, right? We just can't know. And so what can we do? We can look at this thing and figure out how to be in the uncertainty of it and then be prepared to respond to that. We want to monitor COVID levels so that we can be prepared to see what happens next. That's how we handle what we can't know yet. You know, I think there are all kinds of ways to not just abandon people and also not get lost in lying to ourselves or others about how much we actually know.
It sounds a lot like, you know, resilience. You have to be resilient during these complex times. One of the things you mentioned, one of the mind traps is agreement, getting agreement. And, you know, here in the South, we all want to get along and we all want everybody to like us, and open that up a little bit for us a little bit more, because sometimes I do think that is a hindrance
in
our leadership. And there's a difference between respecting and getting along, I guess.
There's a difference between agreeing and getting along.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's really interesting research done on this, because people have been trying to figure out why is it that collections of humans can be stupider than individual humans? Like, that's a really interesting question. How is it that we can know less when there are more of us, or we can you know, get ourselves into more trouble when there are more of us? And it turns out that there's just such a huge part of our biology that's devoted to staying inside the tribe, right? Not getting thrown out. And I think that this means this has all kinds of effects on us. But one of the effects is that we conflate getting along and not having any conflict with staying in the tribe. And I think what leaders need to do, and this is what the airline industry has actually done super effectively, and they have lots of training for pilots and flight attendants on this very question. What we need to do is separate those things out. So you're still inside the tribe, the circle of trust, the circle of collectivity, when you disagree. And we have to train it so that our body and our brain doesn't freak out on us, which it otherwise will. I really think that these mind traps and a ton of what it is to lead in complexity, we have to on purpose learn how to do something else. It has to be intentional. We have to go after it because evolution for tens of thousands of years has brought us here. And then our context has changed so fast. Evolution does not have time to do that for us. We have to on purpose evolve ourselves, our systems, and our societies in order to handle the complexity around us.
Well, Jennifer, we've come to the 30-minute mark or a little bit over. It's been a very stimulating conversation, very, very, very interesting. And we thank you so much for being on the show on behalf of Baptist. Thank you. And for our listeners out there, we recommend the website Cultivating Leadership, a lot of resources. Jennifer has a ton of books out there that are very helpful. And she's certainly an expert on this subject. But Jennifer, once again, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for all the work you're doing, helping medicine be a more effective, more life-giving thing for the people who work inside it and the patients you serve.
Thank you.